on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, shining a spotlight today on the campaign to keep the spirit of 45 alive. You can go to spiritof45.org to learn more about that nationwide effort. One of the veterans who I got to meet in San Diego was Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend, 93 years young now. He flew 142 missions with the 332nd Fighter Group during World War II. He flew P-51s occasionally against ground targets, but mostly as escort for American bombers fending off attacks from German fighter planes. Maybe you recognize the 332nd as the group made up of African-American pilots who had trained in Tuskegee, Alabama, the Tuskegee Airmen. Bob was combat operations officer for the group, working under then-Colonel Benjamin O. Davis, who would eventually become the Air Force's first African-American general. The recent George Lucas movie Red Tails brought another round of attention to the Tuskegee Airmen. And at age 93, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend uses his time to draw attention to causes he believes are important. I caught up with him on the historic 116-year-old steam ferry, the Berkeley, in San Diego Harbor as part of that Spirit of 45 convention. Well, first of all, before I take you back in time, why don't you tell me why you think it's so important to be involved with this Spirit of 45 campaign?
I think that, once again, the country is beginning to face a situation where we need to be concerned about the impact that involvement in these foreign affairs have really and truthfully caused a lot of problems mentally and socially and in some instances physically.
So you think by talking about the end of World War II and some great times in American history, we can change the future of American history? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying change history. I'm saying make history.
Well, you know something about making history. Tell me about the first time you got up in an airplane. Where was that? What was that like for you?
Well, I was in the CPT program in 1939-40. That was really and truthfully the very first time that I had been up in an airplane. All the traveling that I'd done up to that point was on train or by automobile. But when the country realized that Europe was doing something more than just giving training to people for as potential pilots, and they thought, these guys not far from, you know, a lot of trouble. There was, remember, the Italians flew a whole armada of airplanes over. That had two messages. Number one, it was great technology, but number two was they let us know they could fly from there to here. It could easily have had bombs on board.
I'm sure the recent years have been exciting for you to see all the Tuskegee Airmen get the Congressional Gold Medal and then have the movie come out. I know you had a lot of fun with Red Tails. What has that meant to you to see the contributions that you and your fellow pilots, who had to overcome a lot, to see those recognized now?
Well, you said for me and former pilots. Actually, you have to realize that it takes about 11, 12 people to get an airplane into the air.
A lot more than just pilots.
Not more than just pilots. Yep. These other people are very important. Every time I took off, I had the warm feeling that it was prepared as best I could possibly be prepared for the mission by the efforts of all of these other people. I was a quarterback.
Did you ever play quarterback on the football field?
I did that.
Where was that?
Well, I did that at college, and baseball, I played with some of the black teams around New York before they really and truthfully started to expand the operations.
Did you play with some of those famous names from the Negro Leagues?
Well, I know that the New York Cubans were the team that I was associated with the most.
Well, I'm a baseball guy. I'd love to sit here for a while and talk to you about Minnie Minoso or Louis Tiant Sr. or Orlando Cepeda's dad and those other Negro League stars on the Cubans. The New York Cubans. And for that matter, I'd love to hear about your accomplishments in the space program, but I know that our time's limited here, so let's talk World War II. 142 missions, is that right?
Yes, 142 missions in the 15th Air Force. I flew some sorties in the 12th Air Force when we were flying a completely different aircraft for a completely different mission.
Help me understand what it was like to be you at that time, because my understanding is your whole role in your squadron was one of someone who was somewhat expendable. You guys are there to protect these bombers. It means, well, if someone's going to go down, it's going to be you guys, I suppose. Did you feel like the first line of defense?
Well, we were that. There's no doubt about that. And certainly the objective was to allow that bomber to do its mission. And certainly, yes, we were the buffer. But strangely enough, they didn't concentrate on us nearly as much as they did on trying to get the bombers down. So it was fairly easy, as a rule, to chase them off. Don't get me wrong. They would get through sometime because they'd get above and start a dive and just dive straight through. It's almost like suicide. You're going to get caught and picked up after, if not before he gets there. But they, too, had an objective, and that was protect their homeland.
And they had a variety of different planes. At the end of the war, they had planes that were faster and superior to even the one you were flying. Did you ever engage any of those ME-262s?
Yes, I met a 262, and strangely, I met him head-on. And I didn't realize we were going head-on. I thought first that I was overtaking him. The silhouette looked the same. But then when I saw the guns firing, I knew that we were coming toward each other. And we went right past. When I turned around, he was gone.
That's one of those you don't even figure out what it was till it's gone, huh?
Well, dogfights are funny. It can be going on, you know, rather heavily, and then all of a sudden there's nothing. Everybody's gone. Some people took off for home, others. And it was important for us not to go chasing after them, because if you did, you left the bombers open to secondary attacks.
I thought that was a dynamic that was well depicted in the George Lucas film, Red Tails, that aspect of, hey, you got to stick to the plan, not be going for the glory and chasing down a fighter. Was that ever a temptation of yours to go after one of those German planes?
Well, you know, it's like once you get locked on to him, you know, you don't want to let go. But we had some well-grounded discipline, and that was don't be drawn off.
Where did that come from?
The commander. Colonel Davis was a man that had a tough job. What he had to do was to take people who were relatively raw. All of us, how far much more experience could you say one had? You know, guy graduated in first class, guy graduated a month later in second class. And he, from these people, had to take people for, or identify people for key positions, squadron commanders, group operations officers, squadron operations officers, maintenance officers, you know. And he had to get the right guy. Best of all, he recognized when he had made a mistake with a guy, and he made the change right away. He did not mess around.
That's leadership for you. With all those missions, I'm sure you had plenty of close calls. But is there one for you that when you think back on, you feel like, you know, God was really looking out for me on that one?
Yes. We had some of those. I had a barge explode, and I flew through all that debris, got through okay. And the ones that, not direct, but it happens, when on one mission, the fellow that was going to lead the mission said, "Who's flying Charlie today?" Charlie was the last position in the squadron.
Tail end Charlie.
So I said, "I'm flying Charlie." So he said, "Well, let's switch airplanes. Mine's a newer airplane, and Charlie has a lot more activity, you know, staying in formation and so forth. So you take that and I'll fly yours." He never came back. The airplane quit on him.
So that would have been you in the airplane that quit.
Yes. And other instances when attacking a ground target, you can see the rounds coming. And actually, you can do things about it. If it looks like it's going to hit you, you're okay, because it goes like this. But if it looks like it's going by in front, be careful. You better change something, change speed, change direction, change something, because it was pretty much hanging on to you then.
I'm sure you found plenty of bullet holes in your planes, but with stuff like that, with that anti-aircraft fire coming at you,
What's the closest it actually came to hitting you? You personally, I mean your body, not your plane.
I never came close to being hit. I know that there were friends who had rounds go through the cockpit. Mm-hmm. You know, one guy, the first aid kit was behind your back, took the first aid kit out. Another one, the round died just as it got there, and it stayed stuck in his windshield. Yeah.
Close enough. How much did you enjoy the plane you were flying? For people that haven't experienced that airplane, what was it like for you?
That airplane, the P-51, absolutely so far ahead of its time, it really can be said that it swung the war. It swung the things in our direction without question. And as far as the pilots feel, I didn't feel like I climbed into an airplane. I felt like I put it on. I wore it.
And the look on your face says you wouldn't mind wearing it again, that you would go out there right now if there was one out here on the tarmac.
I certainly would love to. Yeah, I know that people think I'm a little too old for that, but I don't think you ever forget some things, and that's one of them. They've let me fly the airplane sometime after we got up, and I fly it okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's important to tell the story of the Tuskegee Airmen? What's the value of that for us today in knowing what you guys did and what you went through?
Well, I think the most important aspects of it is not to let it happen again. The reason we don't need it again. I think that all you have to do is look at the relationship to the people at events like this. Much different. Much different. Some people, these people that you would probably never have had words for. What do you say? I know that the country itself has just absorbed so much in the way of the business and race relations. I feel that we should not even bother with considerations about race. I'm not saying that people should be not like their heritage. I like mine. I'm proud of my heritage. You know? But I don't think that it should be something that we say African-American, Indian-American, Mexican-American, Latin-American, German-American, Canadian-American. Who needs that? You an American or not? You're not.
Well, I know you are. And I get the sense that you're not one who wants to dwell in the past and bring up all those old stories. But can you give us an example of discrimination that you felt throughout this process of becoming a fighter pilot? Was there a moment where you felt like you were treated poorly or differently because of your ancestry?
I can't think of that, but I know of some instances that took place where it's just almost impossible to believe that such thing could happen. I know we had one of the instructors in an accident that required blood transfusion, and the only person on the base that had his type blood was a black nurse. She volunteered to give it. His wife said she'd rather he be dead because she didn't want any black children.
Well, what you guys did helped some people learn that that was a misguided belief, and a lot of people learned that.
Well, I was just going to say, for whatever reason, you know that we people of color, people of other things, you know, have to get out there and demonstrate for you on an individual basis, not on a group consideration. I don't care whether the guys are Jewish. I went to synagogue for 2 years and joked myself. It doesn't really and truthfully make a bit of difference. I think you just know that the individual up there, and you have to have the confidence in it. You know, that was really and truthfully the reason I think a lot of the airlines didn't hire blacks to start with, because they thought the people would be afraid to fly with them. Not that they thought the guy couldn't do the job. It's just that they knew the people would perceive them as something less than the best.
Well, you've helped change that. And I want to thank you, first of all, for serving our country. And thank you for sharing a little bit of this with us. Is there something, when people ask you what you're proud of with your record of service to our country and all the things that you've done since the war, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm most proud of the fact that I can stand up to almost any question, whatever what it is. You know, I think that all too often, you know, people used to say, sun could be shining. And the white guy said, looks like rain. Black guy said, sure does. No opinion. Uh-huh. Right?
But that's not how you operate.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Not that way.
Nope, and we're thankful for that. Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend, 93 years old, of Irvine, California. We heard about 15 minutes of his story, but we could take hours and still not cover everything he did in a 30-year Air Force career. Maybe we'll hear more from him down the road. He's a pretty busy guy. He even has a Facebook page if you want to keep up with him and his travels, see photos of his different stops that he makes, you know, going around spreading the word about causes close to his heart, like keeping the spirit of 45 alive. In a moment, we'll meet another P-51 pilot who had a very special way of celebrating his 90th birthday. Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.